You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. So sit back now and let me tell you a yarn of the 1960 presidential campaign. It's a story about how small events sometimes can have giant consequences and that tests of leadership don't always announce themselves. In the last weeks of the Kennedy-Nixon campaign in 1960, the race was neck and neck. Both candidates had vowed to support the growing civil rights movement. Both Nixon and Kennedy had pledged to seek the support of black voters all across America. But on October 19th, 48 years ago this weekend, there was an arrest in Georgia. Martin Luther King Jr. was arrested along with 52 other protesters at a lunch counter in Rich's department store in Atlanta. King was held over the weekend, and while the other protesters were released, King was sentenced to 4 months hard labor and whisked off to the state pen. This was long before Dr. King was a world-renowned peace advocate and civil rights leader, and in 1960, for a rebellious African-American to be locked away in the state penitentiary in Georgia for any length of time was no simple matter. Observers openly feared King might not come out of that prison alive. Three Southern governors had already told the Kennedy campaign, long before the arrest of King, that any attempt to stir up black voters in the South during a campaign with appeals to civil rights would be met by opposition. The Democrats would lose the South, they threatened. So, what to do? In the Nixon Justice Department, an obscure official named Lawrence Walsh issued a directive. The Eisenhower administration should file a friend of the court brief demanding King's release. Lawrence Walsh, he would be a major figure in the Iran-Contra affair. But back then, he was just in the Justice Department issuing a memo. Memos were sent to the Vice President Nixon and President Eisenhower. Meanwhile, in the Kennedy campaign, an obscure fellow named Harris Walford, who would someday be a senator from Pennsylvania. He was then a professor at Notre Dame and a campaign worker. He had an idea. Kennedy should call Dr. King's wife, 6 months pregnant, and express concern and openly call for King's release. Wofford had to reach the candidate, though. Time was of the essence. They were campaigning around the clock. Wofford's boss, Sergeant Shriver, would try to get the attention of the nonstop campaigning JFK and reached at a hotel near O'Hare Airport in Chicago. Kennedy responded immediately. He called Coretta Scott King from the hotel. His brother Bobby Kennedy called the judge the next morning in Georgia and demanded King's release. And he was released on October 27th on bail. The story got little coverage, but word leaked out in the African-American community, and one voice reacted loudly and clearly, Baptist minister Martin Luther King Sr., who had already endorsed Richard Nixon weeks before. He was a man who was openly suspicious of Catholics, but he went public. This man, Kennedy, King Sr. said, was willing to wipe the tears from my daughter-in-law's eyes. Well, I've got a suitcase full of votes, and I'm going to take them to Mr. Kennedy and dump them in his lap. Dozens of black leaders across the country, many formerly sharing a suspicion of Catholics, followed suit. 250,000 blacks voted for Kennedy in Michigan, the same in Illinois, a state Kennedy carried by only 9,000 votes. The decision, a single phone call, changed history. The memo sent to Vice President Nixon about the King case was never acted upon. It was lost. The moment passed, like the torch, to the Democrats in 1960. We are thrilled to have the central character in that drama with us. Harris Walford joins us from Washington. Senator, thanks for being with us.
Delighted to be with you.
That is an amazing story. I get choked up even thinking about it.
The central character was candidate and Senator John Kennedy on the one hand and Coretta King on the other. And you told the story beautifully about Daddy King. He had been on a full-page ad or a big ad in an Atlanta paper with a lot of Baptist ministers warning against a Catholic being elected to the presidency and supporting Nixon until Kennedy called his daughter-in-law.
And did you have any idea that your impulse to urge the candidate to make that call would be so historic?
Oh, we knew it was a very controversial idea because Kennedy wanted to do something. He had, in fact, agreed with the governor of Georgia that if he didn't issue any public statement that he had ready to issue and checked it with the governor of Georgia, the governor would get King out in due course. And so he was bound not to issue just a broadside statement supporting King. He wanted to get King out for the sake of of American justice, and also in the campaign. They obviously wanted this embarrassment because it's Southern Democrats, you have to remember, in those days, that were the biggest obstacle to civil rights in this country. Until Roosevelt, the great majority of blacks voted for Republicans because of Abraham Lincoln saving the Union and ending slavery.
Sure.
Roosevelt switched, began to get a majority because the majority were poor and he was supporting the poor. But still, it was a very divided Negro vote, as it was called then.
And the evangelicals were very anti-Catholic. We forget that back in 1960.
Well, and that it was so difficult because the white majority in the South was then was supporting segregation, and supporting King was risking Kennedy's victory in any number of Southern states. Hmm. So I had no idea that Kennedy would necessarily do it, but we were blocked as to what could be done. And I said to a great black friend who was my colleague in the civil rights section we were running, if Kennedy could just call and convey his sympathy directly to Coretta, just personally, that's not issuing a public statement. And my friend said, that's it. We've got to get that idea to the senator. And I tried to get through. I had gone out on a limb on some civil rights things a little earlier in the campaign, and they were very busy on the road in the Middle West, and they didn't answer my phone, so I called Sergeant Shriver, later the founder of the Peace Corps, and he said, that's a wonderful idea. And
wow.
He had founded the Catholic Interracial Council in Chicago,
sure.
And he loved the idea. He was viewed as the civil rights lover in the family, and he said, if I don't get arrested speeding out to O'Hare Airport, we're going to get that idea to him. And when he got there, he saw Salinger and Sorensen and the staff in the suite. And he said, it'll never happen if I wait while they're all there. It'll be a committee. He waited until the last one, Salinger, I think, or went into the John, and they were alone. And he put the idea to Kennedy. He said, Kennedy thought, smiled, and said, do you have her number? And called her.
Wow.
And she called me the next hour or two later and said, you probably put him up to it, but it was so wonderful. And
well,
Daddy King, of course, heard about it, and he
and the
went
rest
public.
Is history. The rest is history. Well, it's a great story in the retelling, and so important to remind ourselves of how racial politics has changed so much between then and now, 2008. And you are working with the Barack Obama campaign. We have to go, but former Senator Harris Wofford, thank you so much for joining us.
Remember one thing, 100,000 votes have made the difference.
That's right. That's right. Harris Wofford joined us from Washington, remembering the 1960 campaign and a test of leadership that's worth remembering.